Shalom. This is Yair Davidi from New Bambi, Britain Broadcasting, Israel. At present, we will discuss the weekly portion. Portion Vayechi concerns that portion of Genesis, extending from Genesis, the book of Genesis 47:28, through to chapter 50. Including chapter 50. And in Hebrew, it is called Vayehi, after an expression in Hebrew with which the portion begins. Vayehi Yaakov, and Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. So the whole age of Jacob was 147 years. Now Jacob had grown old, thought the time to come for him to depart of this world had arrived, and therefore called to Joseph. Also in this portion, one thing that we should notice is that the names Jacob and Israel switch around. Remember that Jacob was also named Israel. Israel was another name for Jacob. And in this portion, sometimes Jacob is named Jacob, and sometimes he is called by the name Israel. And there are reasons for this, but we will not go into it the moment, but this aspect, when and how and why these names are to be applied and why one name is just not the other is also something of interest, which is worth going into at another time. To all events, we see that Joseph was called unto Jacob. Jacob had called Joseph to come unto him. And so Jacob came. And so Joseph came, and then Jacob asked of Joseph, he says to him, that he should not bury him in the land of Egypt, that he should take up his body after he is dead into the land of Canaan, and bury him there. And he says, bury me not, I pray thee, in Egypt. And the word translated as I pray thee is nar. Nar in Hebrew, which can also mean now. Nah can mean both please, I pray you, I implore you, or it can also mean now. And the English word now, at present, and meaning at present, and now, the English word now is probably derived from the Hebrew nah. The two words are not dissimilar, they're very similar, they're very alike to each other, and dialectical pronunciations of the one can sound very much like the other. And so Jacob asked Joseph to bury him in the land of Canaan after he should depart from this world. And Joseph then swore unto him that such is what he would do. Later, it says, and it came to pass after these things, see Genesis 48, verse 1, that Joseph was told that his father was sick, so he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. And he came once again unto Jacob. And Jacob, or Israel, as Jacob is also known as Israel, strengthened himself and sat up on the bed. And then he said unto Joseph, he begins to bless Joseph. And he says in Genesis 48:3, and Jacob said unto Joseph, God Almighty appeared unto me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me. And said unto me, behold, I will make thee fruitful and multiply thee, and I will make of thee a multitude of people, and I will give this land to thy seed after thee for an everlasting possession. And now thy two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, which were born unto thee in the land of Egypt before I came unto thee into Egypt, are mine. As Reuben and Shimon, they shall be mine. Thy issue which thou begettest after them shall be thine, and they shall be called after the name of their brethren in their inheritance. So this brings up to something that a lot of people are not aware of, which could be important, but it is interesting. Apparently, Joseph had other sons. Ephraim and Manasseh were not the only two sons that Joseph had. He had other sons. The commentators dispute amongst themselves as to whether these other sons had been born before this event, before Jacob was blessing him, or they were destined to be born afterwards, because the Hebrew word here, and thy issue which thou begettest after them shall be thine, and or ladder techa. So this Hebrew word is a bit unusual, and it can mean either you have those other such children that you shall in the future give birth to, or it can also mean which you have already given birth to. And for our purposes, it doesn't really make much difference. The point is that Joseph did eventually have other children, and these children were assimilated, were taken into the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh. As it says, they shall be called after the name of their brethren in their inheritance. They became part of the tribes of Manasseh and of Ephraim. And this is why we find certain names in the books of Chronicles relating to the genealogies of Ephraim and Manasseh, that we find some anomalies. We find certain things which don't fit in with the other rest of Scripture, and this is because of the Book of Chronicles tells us about these other sons, who they were and what tribes they went to, but doesn't say so expressly. So we will consider at another point somewhere else in our studies, but it should be noted now that Joseph had other sons. He had other sons, and some of these sons were taken into Ephraim, and some of them were taken into Manasseh, and they became part of those tribes. And they received the blessing whichsoever of these tribes, Ephraim or Manasseh, they were absorbed amongst. And this is the opinion of all the great commentators, of Onkelos, 3520 CE, Ibn Ezra, Nahmanides, Radak, Hanatziv. They all say this, and possibly others disagree with them, but we have not come across any. And it seems to be unanimous. And this too seems to fit in with the simple meaning of the Hebrew words, of the Hebrew passage here. So Jacob continued to bless the sons of Joseph, and he said, "As for me, when I came from Padan, Rachel died by me in the land of Canaan, and the way which yet there was but a way to come unto Ephrat, and I buried her there in the way of Ephrat, the same as Bethlehem. And Israel beheld Joseph's sons and said, 'Who are these?' So, and then Israel, Jacob, he saw the two sons of Joseph, and he said, 'Who are these?' So he already knew them. So we ask, 'Who are these?' So the Zohar and other commentators and Midrashim say that he is actually hinting here to the Lost Ten Tribes. The Lost Ten Tribes are referred to or addressed in different passages of the Bible by the expression, "Who are these?" It says in Isaiah 49:21, it says, "When thou shalt say in thy heart, 'Who hath brought me this thing? I have lost my children, and I am desolate, and a captive, and moving to and fro, and who hath brought up these? Behold, I was left alone. These, where had they been? Who are these?'" And what does it mean, "Who are these?" This is what Judah will say. The Jewish people, when they see the Lost Ten Tribes returning, they will say, as Isaiah here in 49:21 describes them as saying, that they will say, "Who are these? Where did these come from? I was alone, I was persecuted, I was wandering to and fro, and where were these? Why didn't they help me when they could have done? Where were they?" So that, in effect, is what the Zohar and the Midrash puts into the mouth of Jacob when he saw Ephraim and Manasseh. He himself, he gave expression to what the Jews in the future would also express. And for more details of this, you should go to our website and see the relevant article on this, or buy our book, Ephraim, which goes into it in even more detail with references and explanations. And you may learn about this, see where it is, by going to our website, www.britam.org, BRITAM.org. And there you will see our publications, and you'll see the book Ephraim and other books of great value that you should buy and are worth buying, with knowledge that you need to know. In addition to that, on our website itself, you will come across hundreds of articles on these and related subjects, that also you will find well worth perusing. And Genesis 48:9, Joseph said unto his father, they are my sons, whom God hath given me in this place. And he said, bring them, pray unto me, and I will bless them. So Joseph did. And Joseph proceeded to present his two sons before Jacob. He took Ephraim in his right hand, facing Israel's left hand, and Manasseh in his left hand toward Israel's right hand. He brought them near unto him. In other words, if someone is facing you, and you are standing before him, and you have one person on your right hand and one person on your left hand, the person on your right hand will be facing the other person's left hand. The positions will be reversed. So he put Ephraim in his right hand towards Israel's left hand, and Manasseh in his left hand toward Israel's right hand. The intention was that Israel, Jacob, should just stretch out his hands, and therefore should put his right hand on the head of Manasseh and his left hand on the head of Ephraim. But Israel, Jacob, crossed his hands over, and he put his right hand on the head of Ephraim and his left hand upon Manasseh's head. He switched the positions. He switched the positions by crossing his hands over. He switched the preeminence, the way, the blessing that he would say would devolve. He switched the order, but he did not switch the children around. The children remained standing where they were. Manasseh still remained on his right hand, and Ephraim still remained on his left hand. So the sages said, and we have on our website, we have an article on this, several articles, and also in our book Ephraim and in our book Joseph, you can see explanations of this, that in effect he was, by switching his hands around, he was not depriving Manasseh of his greatness, of his preeminence. He was merely emphasizing the fact that Manasseh would become great after Ephraim. That first Ephraim would become great, and then Manasseh would become strong and powerful after him. And we, in our works, we identify Ephraim with the British and the daughters of Britain, the British Isles. Australia, New Zealand, they are Ephraim. And we had the British Empire, and they controlled one quarter of the earth, and ruled over one third of the world's population, and was probably the greatest empire that ever lived and ever will be, and the most benevolent, the best empire, the one which did the most good in all of history, on the whole, with some exceptions. Great and painful exceptions, but on the whole it did a great deal of good, and the British Empire was ruled by Ephraim. After Ephraim came the turn of Manasseh, and Manasseh is the USA, as we explained several times, and also in several articles on our website, in some detail, and also in our books, in several books that we've written on this subject. And these books are available also from our website. And we have an address in the USA, we have an address in Israel, and the books may be ordered or by snail mail, by sending us a check, or by PayPal. However, it's convenient to you. So this was the point of the blessing. It should also be also indicated here that one of the sources we quote says the Manasseh in the future, in other words the USA, will be instrumental in rebuilding the Third Temple. Third Temple will be rebuilt, and Manasseh will be instrumental in helping it be rebuilt and bringing the rebuilding of it forward. So that too is something worth bearing in mind. And Genesis 48:15 continues, and he blessed Joseph and said, God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac did walk, the God which fed me all my life long unto this day, the angel which redeem me from all evil. Bless the lads, and let my name be named on them, and the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. And when Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand upon the head of Ephraim, it displeased him, and he held up his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head unto Manasseh's head. Joseph said unto his father, "Not so, my father, for this is the firstborn. Put the right hand upon his head." And his father refused and said, "I know it, my son, I know it. He also shall become a people, and he also shall be great. But truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his seed shall become a multitude of nations." And these expressions, "he also" and "he too," also emphasize the point we made, that the whole purpose of switching the hands over was to impart the significance that Manasseh would be great, but that Manasseh would achieve his greatness later. And also that Ephraim would become a ruler over many peoples, as the British Empire indeed was. And it had a great influence, as we find later in Deuteronomy, this blessing being reaffirmed, as it says, "His glory is like the firstling of his bullock, and his horns are like the horns of unicorns. With them he shall push the people together to the ends of the earth. And they are the 10,000s of Ephraim, and they are the thousands of Manasseh." So we see here the expression, "his seed shall become a multitude of nations." His seed shall become a multitude of nations. That is how it is translated in Genesis 48:19, referring to Ephraim. "But truly his younger brother," in other words Ephraim, "shall be greater than he, and his seed shall become a multitude of nations." And in Hebrew, the Hebrew says Melot Hagoyim, literally means the fullness of the peoples, the fullness of the nations. In other words, because of him, very many nations would come into existence, and they would have their very essence, their very realization, their very independence and existence on this earth. To be reaffirmed and to have become into effect through the agency of Ephraim. And this is what the British Empire did, and what the British Empire must be thanked for, and also the USA after the British Empire. The USA and the British Empire, in one respect, may be considered continuations of each other, extensions of each other. Because the peoples who developed them and pushed them forward had basically the same stock, with slight differences, with differences of character and differences of application, but there's one common thread running through them all. "And he blessed them that day, saying, And thee shall Israel bless, saying, God make thee as Ephraim and his Manasseh, and he set Ephraim before Manasseh." And then it goes on, and he continued to bless the sons of Joseph. And then he calls together his sons, the rest of his sons. Jacob had 12 sons, Israel had 12 sons. These are the forefathers of the 12 sons of Israel, of the 12 tribes of Israel. It says in Genesis 49:1, "And Jacob called unto his sons and said, Gather yourselves together, that I may tell you that which will before you in the last days." He tells, bring them together, let them gather together, let them come unto him. And he will tell them, he will predict unto them what will happen to them in the last days. By looking at these verses, these predictions, and other predictions in the Bible, and seeing where candidates are in this world today, where nations are in the world today who fulfilled these blessings, we can affirm who these nations are, who the Lost Ten Tribes are. Remember, the Lost Ten Tribes are the majority of the Israelite people. There were originally 12 tribes of Israel. 12 tribes of Israel in the land of Israel, in the land of Canaan, Israel. And there, the 10 of the tribes split apart, created their own kingdom called the Kingdom of Israel. They were conquered by the Assyrians, taken into captivity, and they lost consciousness of their identity, They became known as the Lost Ten Tribes of Israel, but they are the majority, they are the greater part of the tribes of Israel. And there are all kinds of blessings and predictions and prophecies concerning them in the Bible. And through examining these prophecies and seeing which nations fit them, fit the prophecies, which nations have fulfilled the prophecies, we can gather together evidence as to where they are. And this is what we do. This is what BritAm does. This is what our organization does and has done and still doing. We confirm these findings with secular studies, studies in secular history, studies in archaeology, studies in linguistics and mythology. And we have proven in at least 8 books and hundreds of articles of ours as to where the Lost Ten Tribes are today, that they are basically amongst Western peoples, with the so-called Anglo-Saxon peoples, English-speaking peoples, fulfilling the role of the tribes of Joseph. In these areas, in amongst the Anglo-Saxon peoples, you will find a dominating element from the tribes of Joseph, from Ephraim and Manasseh. Amongst other peoples, other Western peoples, as we shall explain now in this talk in a few minutes, you will find the other tribes from the Lost Tribes of Israel are there, are amongst the related nations of Western Europe. And this blessing, this present blessing that Jacob is giving, is one of our sources which prove our identifications. In this present talk, we are not going to go into detail in here and there. We're going to skip over a few candidates and a few important points. We're just going to drop out altogether. We're just going to give you an overall view. But we have other talks on this subject, other talks going into the same matters in more detail. We also have articles and we have books. And we have a lot of material which is available for you. And if these points interest you, and they should interest you, and if they are important, then they should be important to you because they really are important to you, then you should take advantage of what we have to offer. Jacob continues in Genesis 49:3, Reuben, thou my firstborn, my might, and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity and the excellency of power. Unstable as water, thou shalt not excel, because thou wentest up to thy father's bed, thou defiledest thou it. He went up to my couch. We identify Reuben with France. France. The French have a significant element from Reuben amongst them, and this element from Reuben has determined much of the French character. And this verse, according to one explanation, as to one commentary from the Zohar, as quoted on our website and in our book Ephraim, actually tells us that from Reuben, in other words, from the Franks, from the French, an attempt would be made to conquer the land of Israel before the time had come for the Israelites to return. And this attempt we identify with the Crusades, when the Franks, the French, led the Crusades and attempted to reconquer the Holy Land. And other aspects of Reuben and his characteristics and who he was and how these are fulfilled in the French character may be seen in what we have written on this subject. He goes on in Genesis 49:5, Simeon and Levi are brethren, instruments of cruelty in their habitations. Instruments of cruelty, Clohamas, which can also be translated to mean as Makura Tehem, Clehamas Makura Tehem, instruments of violence are their source of livelihood, not in their habitations, but in their source of livelihood. And we find from Simeon and Levi a lot of policemen and security people descend from these tribes, especially from Shimon in the USA. A good portion of the policemen are descended from Scotsmen, from Scotch Irish. Many of these come from Shimon. And also in the land of Israel, a lot of Levites are to be found in the police forces. On the whole, we identify Shimon in Hebrew. We identify him with the Western Celts, a portion of them, the Welsh, some of the Irish, the Britons, Quebecos, and other similar elements. We're not saying that all of them descend from Shimon, but Shimon is to be found amongst them as well as elsewhere. And Levi today is to be found mainly amongst the Jews. After Jeroboam separated from the lost tribes, from the tribe of Judah, after Jeroboam led the lost 10 tribes into an independent kingdom, it tells us in the book of Chronicles how he set up his own forms of worship. He set up golden calves and down in Beersheba, and he wanted the people to come and worship them. And also he deposed the Levites from their officiating in the religious capacity. He appointed other people as the priests, and the Levites were out of a job, and therefore they went to Judah. And so we have most of the Levites amongst the present-day Jews. And we continue, as Jacob speaks quite harshly about Shimon and the Levi. So we don't like speaking badly of people. So those who are interested can go to our website and read the relevant passages themselves. Or buy one of our books and also read up on it. Or just open up the Bible with the commentators. Jacob was not pleased with Shimon and Levi, and he did not speak nicely of them. But even so, Moses was to emerge from the tribe of Levi. And Moses was to rectify some of the damage, as if to say some of the bad name that had been given to the characteristics of the Levite tribe. Jacob continued in Genesis 49:8. He starts to bless Judah. Judah, thou art him thy brethren shall praise. Thy hand shall be in the neck of thine enemies. Thy father's children shall bow down before thee. The expression, thou art him thy brethren shall praise, in Hebrew is Ata yuduka ahecha. Your brothers will acknowledge your righteousness. As it says in Zechariah 8:23, in those days 10 men out of all the languages of the nations even shall take hold of the skirt of him that is a Jew, saying, we will go with you, for we have heard that God is with you. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the plain my son thou art gone. He stooped down, he crashed as a lion, as an old lion. Who shall rouse him up? So this is this verse by Stephen Collins, in one of his works, was actually the first to point this out, as far as we know. And he applied this verse to the present-day state of Israel, which has aspects both of an old lion and a young lion. The Jewish people are an old people, a nation people, and they return to their land. At the same time, they are renewing themselves. They're like a young lion. And they are asserting themselves now in these latter times, and these whole prophecies concern the latter times. And so the present-day state of Israel is Judah, represents Judah as both an old lion and a young lion, one at the same time. And this is very apt, very appropriate to the present situation. So it says in Genesis 49:10, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh come, and unto him shall the gathering of the people be. Now this verse has been interpreted in many ways, and very often these different interpretations are all correct. They all have some aspects of the truth in them. And the Hebrew language lends itself to these type of multifold interpretations. So one interpretation that we like, which is brought forward by Menashe ben Yisrael, who's the rabbi from Holland who went to England and persuaded Oliver Cromwell to allow the Jews back into England. And he was quite a scholar in his own right, and he interpreted this verse as saying that the mark of recognition, the scepter, shall not depart from Judah. That Judah would always be recognized as who he was. Judah would always be recognized as belonging to the tribe of Israel. No matter what Judah did, they would always know Judah as to who he was, and Judah would always be aware as to who he was. It was only the 10 tribes, the lost 10 tribes, who would lose their identity. But in the end time, that will be changed. When the Messiah comes, Shiloh, in other words, Shiloh, the Messiah comes, and then the people would gather unto him from all the tribes, where it says the gathering of the people, actually it's in plural, the gathering of the peoples of Israel will come unto the Messiah. The Messiah will tell each and every person which tribe he belongs to, and he will reconfirm the identifications of the lost tribes of Israel. And we are doing the work of the Messiah. We are not the Messiah, God forbid. We are not anything like it, but we are helping bring forward the process. We help doing something to bring forward the process in the same way as those who go back to the land of Israel amongst the Jews, rebuild the land of Judah, and those who help them, they too are bringing forward the process, the messianic process, to bring forward the coming of the Messiah. The future messianic era is being prepared by us and by the Zionists and by all those who are in favor of this work and in favor of learning the Torah and learning the Bible, and going, coming back to the Bible and helping their own peoples from the lost tribes of Israel be strong and be strengthened in their faith. All those are doing this part of this process of this work that we have should all participate in, of arousement. The final redemption will come due to initial arousement from below. We have to arouse ourselves and want the Messiah to come. We have to want the Messianic era to come forward, and we have to work in order to bring it close. That is what we are doing, and you should help us, and you should also participate in this enterprise. In Genesis 49:11, he says, "Bring his foal unto the vine, and his ass's colt unto the choice vine. He washed his garments in wine, and his clothes in the blood of grapes." And this apparently refers to the Messiah taking vengeance upon the enemies of Israel, taking vengeance upon the enemies of the Jewish people. The Messiah will take vengeance. He will take revenge upon those who persecuted the Jews. As it says in Isaiah 63:1, "Who is he that cometh from Edom? He dyed garments from Bozrah. This is that is glorious in his apparel, traveling in the greatness of his strength. I that speak in righteousness, might ye to save. Wherefore why art thou red in thine apparel? And thy garments like he who treads in the wine fat." And he answers, "I have trodden the wine press alone, and of the people there was none with me. For I will tread them in mine anger, and trample them in my fury. And their blood shall be sprinkled upon my garments, and I will stain all my raiment. For the day of vengeance is in mine heart, the year of my redeemed is come. I looked, and there was none to help, and I wondered, there was none to uphold. Therefore mine own arm brought salvation unto me, and my fury it upheld me. And I will tread down the peoples in mine anger, and make them drunk in my fury. And I will bring down their strength to the earth." See our commentary to Isaiah on our website. And also see our other writings. As it continues, Genesis 49:12, "His eyes shall be red with wine, and his teeth white with milk." And then he goes on, "With Zebulun, Zebulun shall dwell at the heaven of the sea, and he shall be for the haven of ships, and his border shall be unto Sidon." Zebulun, haven of the sea, Chaf Yamim, Zebulun, Chaf Yamim Yishkon, it says in Hebrew. In Hebrew, it means that Zebulun will dwell on the shores of the sea. That is a literal translation. And in a literal translation of what the Hebrew says, Zebulun shall dwell on the shores of the sea. We identify Zebulun with Holland, with the Netherlands. In ancient times, according to the map of Ptolemy, look up on the map of Ptolemy, in the geography of Ptolemy, you will see in the northern section of Holland, a people named Zebulun Goy. Zebulun Goy, in other words, in Hebrew, Goy means people, Zebulun means Zebulun, the people of Zebulun dwelling there, named by a non-Israelite, a non-Christian, a pagan geographer, recording the presence of a people of that name in the northern regions of Holland. And also there are other names there, other names amongst the peoples who said in Holland also have names similar to those of the clan names among Zebulun. See our book, The Tribes, for detailed information, for illustrations, for verbatim quotes on this matter. And now, in the Netherlands, one third of the whole of the country is under sea level. Another third is subject to periodic inundations, to flooding by the sea. They need these dikes, these gigantic dams and walls all over the country to keep the sea water out. Two thirds of the country, in this sense, is literally speaking on the shores of the sea. Two-thirds of the people of Holland, two-thirds of the Netherlands is on the shores of the sea, literally speaking. The Bible says that Zebulun shall dwell at the heaven of the sea, shall dwell Chaf Yamim, Zebulun the Chaf Yamim Yishkon, that Zebulun would dwell on the shores of the sea, that's what it says in Hebrew. And that is the only place where we find people, literally speaking, who do dwell on the shores of the sea, literally, and that is the only place where we find Zebulon Goy in history, people named the people of Zebulon as having dwelt. So, and there are other additional points of evidence, strong proofs, much more evidence indicating that Zebulon was to be dominant amongst the people of the Netherlands. Read our book, The Tribes, for an indication of some of this evidence. It continues, Genesis 49:14, Issachar is a strong ass crouching down between two burdens. We identify Issachar as the Swiss and part of the Finnish people, and their characteristics, as given in the commentators, does fit Issachar. Be certain of it. You can read our books for some of this evidence, and more will be forthcoming, God willing, in the future, in other works that we will publish. And he continues in Genesis 49:15, he saw that rest was good in the land, that it was pleasant, and bowed down his shoulder to Ban, and became a servant unto tribute. And it goes on, Genesis 49:16, Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Dan has been given a bad press. Both Jewish commentators and Christian commentators say bad things about Dan. They give him a bad reputation. I think it's a bit undeserved that Dan gave us Shimshon, gave us Samson, the hero. And Dan is actually quite a valuable acquisition to the Israelite nation. It says, Genesis 49:17, Dan shall be a serpent by the way, an adder in the path that biteth the horse's heels, so that his rider shall fall backward. It says, Dan shall be a serpent by the way. When you look where a snake has gone on a dusty path, you'll see wriggles in the ground. You'll see the outlines of his stomach. In other words, a snake leaves a mark. He leaves a trace of where he has been, because he crawls on his stomach. He wriggles around in it. So till we find the name Dan being left in places where the Danites, where the tribe of Dan migrated from and to. And even now we have such areas as Denmark. The Danes themselves claim to be descended from Dan, and they are. And so in Ireland, Northern Ireland, where the Tuatha De Danann, the tribe of Dana or Dan, was also very important in early Irish mythology and traditions. We have such places as Donegal in the northwest, a very important section of Dan, and the name Dan and Don throughout the British Isles, especially in Ireland, but also in Scotland, Wales, and elsewhere. Just one point, that some people say that these names mean something else, that they have other explanations for these names. So we do not dispute this. But you should know something about Asian peoples, they didn't want to use a name unless they could attribute a meaning to it. In other words, they wouldn't use a name unless it had some type of meaning in their eyes. And if it didn't have a meaning, they would reinterpret it according to their own language. And therefore, we find examples of places which changed hands from one nation to another several times over. And in each case, the nation changed the name slightly, or reinterpreted the existing name according to its own language. We have examples of this. And so our attributing certain names to Israelite tribes does not contradict these names also having significance in other languages. So you can say, so how do we know which became first? So we know which came first through historical records by these names having been existed in the area before the said languages were predominant in the area. At least this holds in many cases. And if we take each and every case individually, examine it, and we prove our own case through historical records and through historical parallels and by combining different disciplines. After Dan comes Gad. Genesis 49:19. Gad, a troop shall overcome him, but he shall overcome at the last. Gad, we identify with the Swedes, with Sweden. And after that, 49:20, out of Asher his bread shall be fat, and he shall yield royal dainties. Asher was in Scandinavia. Naphtali is a high net loose. He hath done goodly words. Naphtali became predominant in Norway and amongst the Vikings. Genesis 49:22, Joseph is a fruitful bough, even a fruitful bough by a well, his branches run over the wall. The expression is branches run over the wall in Hebrew is alay ayin, b'chor shor alay ayin. Alay ayin can also refer to the eye, to the seeing eye, and in the great seal of the USA, an eye, the eye of providence, is one of the signs. And incidentally, traditionally, one of the symbols of Manasseh was a picture of Egypt. And so, if you on the Great Seal, if you look at a dollar bill, you see a reproduction of the Great Seal. You see the eye of providence, the eye of Joseph, superimposed on a pyramid, which also recalls to us Manasseh. And in our works and in our articles, you will see this more details, more discussion on these matters. And this then is our portion. And he goes on and he continues to expand. Jacob continued to expand on his blessing to Joseph, and he said, blessing him, the Almighty who shall bless thee with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lieth under, blessings of the breast and of the womb. The blessings of thy father hath prevailed above the blessings of my progenitors unto the utmost bond of their everlasting hills. They shall be on the head of Joseph and on the crown of the head of him that was separate from his brethren. And then he continues in Genesis 49:27, Benjamin shall be ravened as a wolf. In the morning he shall devour the prey, and at night he shall divide the spoil. Most of Benjamin was to be found amongst the Jewish people. Most of Benjamin are to be found amongst the Jews. As it says in 2 Kings, it tells us that Benjamin joined Judah. Benjamin was with Judah. Benjamin became part of Judah. Even though a portion of Benjamin also split away, also became associated with the 10 tribes, and some of them, Benjamin went to Norway, though most Norwegians, most of the Israelites in Norway do not relate to Benjamin, they relate more to Naphtali. Even so, some of them had gone to Norway and to Denmark, and then they came out of there, and they settled in Normandy in northern France, and they became the Normans who conquered England in 1066. In Genesis 49:28, it says, all these are the 12 tribes of Israel, and this is that their father spake unto them and blessed them. Everyone according to his blessing, he blessed them, and all these are the 12 tribes of Israel. Each one received his own separate independent blessing, and so too each one of us in our own lives. Every single one of us has his own individual capacity, his own individual goal, his own individual merit. He is a complete person in his own right, a complete kingdom, his own dimensions, and God created him and gave him what he needs to fulfill his purpose in this world. And we should all realize this, we're all creatures of the Almighty and more special, we're all unique. God created each and every one of us for a reason. We're all chosen, every one of us is chosen. Chosen in our own way. We are unique in the way that we must go in. We are unique in the way of the Almighty. The Almighty has chosen each and one of us, every one of us, to do his own thing, to go in his own path. We should seek for our path and seek to do the will of the Almighty, to seek to do what God wants of us. And then it tells us, our portion continues and tells us how Jacob died. And he requested that he should be taken up into the land of Canaan and buried in the cave of the Machpelah, Mara to Machpelah, which is in Hebron. Now in Hebron, and it is close by to the Jewish city of Kiryat Arba. And I lived there for a long period of time, and I can tell you it is a very special place and it's worth visiting. And that is where the patriarchs are buried, in the Marat Machpelah, in Hebron. And then he passed away, Jacob died, and his sons mourned him, and they embalmed him, and they requested permission from Pharaoh to take their father and go up into the land of Canaan and bury him there. And Pharaoh let them, they went up with a great number of people into Canaan. And then old ceremony, old well-to-do there, and they buried Jacob in that area, in the Marada Machpelah, in the cave of the patriarchs in Hebron. And then the brothers of Jacob came unto him and asked that he should forgive them for having sold them, having sold him. Because remember, the brothers of Jacob, the brothers of Israel, the brothers of Joseph, the brothers of Joseph had been jealous of him because Jacob their father had favored Joseph more than them. So they had taken hold of Joseph and done violence unto him. They had torn his cloak off him and thrown him in a pit. And then they had sold him to Ishmaelites, dirty Arabs going down into Egypt, and who'd taken him down and sold him as a slave. And then they took his cloak, and they bloodied it with the blood of a goat, and told their father that a wild beast had devoured it. And so Joseph had been sold as a slave into Egypt, and through a sequence of events, he'd from the slave advanced to become the ruler of the country. And he had become reconciled with his brethren, and he had been reconciled with his brethren, with his brothers in their lifetime of their father. So now they were afraid that perhaps because of their father was alive, Joseph hadn't done anything to them. He had held himself back out of respect for their father, but now that their father was dead, they were afraid that maybe Joseph would try and get back at them somehow or other. So they came unto him and spoke unto him, and Joseph reassured them. He told them, don't worry about it, it was all for the good. You had bad intentions, but the Almighty had his own aims, his own purpose in this whole thing, and that God intended that everything should come out well. And then he goes on and tells us that Joseph too passed away. As we all shall do, God willing, Joseph was 110 when he passed away, and when we may we all live to that age and more, and be healthy and wealthy and happy, and do what the Almighty wants of us. Thank you very much. This is Yair Davidi from New Bambi Britain Broadcasting, Israel.